American Soccer Show on World Football Day.
They're celebrating in two Central American cities so far. Well, more cities in Honduras, definitely. Chicharito, Fernando Arce, the ball, Jimenez!
Welcome to the latest episode of the Mexican Soccer Show. You just heard Fernando Palomo's call on ESPN with that spectacular bicycle kick goal by Raul Jimenez. So unless you've been living under a rock for these past 3 or 4 days, that was not your first time listening to that call or knowing what it referred to. I'm Eric Gomez, and I'm here in Mexico City. I'm joined, as always, by Tom Marshall in Guadalajara.
Yo.
Johnny Rico's over there somewhere in San Diego.
Hey, what's up, guys?
And Naeem Moran, who's currently trolling all of Spain for some reason.
Yes, I'm over here watching some Spanish football every weekend and teaching English to little Spanish kids.
That should be fun.
Yeah,
that
it is fun.
All right, well, I think we'll kick off this week's episode of the show, or this special edition of the show, I might say, considering that we're less than 24 hours away game in San Jose, the last World Cup hexagonal game for the Mexican national team, and by all accounts, the most important game of this four-year cycle. If Mexico loses, then Panama has a pretty big opportunity to leapfrog them the same way that Mexico did to them last Friday. But a Mexico draw would pretty much seal the deal. They have not lost in Costa Rica since 1992. First, I want to get all of your guys' thoughts on the game on Friday. I was actually lucky enough to be at the Estadio Azteca, just a fantastic atmosphere. But, you know, you miss some details when you're sitting in the stands sipping on some beers. I'll start with you, Tom. What was the biggest kind of tactical switch that you saw from going from Chepo de la Torre and Luis Fernando Tena to Victor Manuel Vucetich?
Yeah, I mean, aside from, I think, the personnel change, I think Rafa Márquez coming in was massive for Ayala. Like, pretty much out of the back four, I think there was, out of the back five, including the goalkeeper, I mean, pretty much all changed, wasn't it? I mean, Ochoa coming in, I think a lot of people predicted that, but, you know, also Layún on the right, and then Ayala, Rafa Márquez, Torres Nilo. So there's big changes in the defence, and also in those central midfield positions. I mean, I thought playing Carlos Peña was absolutely massive call, considering he hasn't been that great for the national team and he's not that experienced at this level. And, you know, he got rid of Salcido and Torrado. I mean, I think that was another bold decision, and I think a lot of Mexico fans out there, you know, were pretty happy that one of those two wasn't in the centre of the field. What else? Like, yeah, I mean, obviously the two strikers as well, which Chepo has experimented with. Didn't seem to work, but I thought it worked. I thought it was, there were some positives on Friday with Chicharito and Peralta, although obviously Raul Jimenez just, you know, stole all the headlines with that. I mean, that was just an amazing, amazing goal. One you just can't stop watching over and over again. But yeah, I thought there was a better intensity. But then again, I thought, you know, it wasn't a great performance. I thought it was, again, pretty average, you know what I mean? And I think it was just a moment, a really, really special moment that really saved Mexico there, because, you know, they're going to have to improve a lot on Tuesday if they're going to get
really
a result. Yeah.
Now, Johnny, your particular prayers were answered. Vucetich starting Memo Ochoa in place of Jesus Corona. Both guys, I've always said, very talented. Very special goalkeepers. Corona could easily be playing in Europe as well as alongside Ochoa, but he isn't. And Ochoa just basically got his just rewards for being so good in the league. Won this season, not just this season. Ever since he arrived at Ajaccio, he's been top drawer. That's interesting, though. And the changes that Tom mentioned, do you see any big lineup switches from Friday to Tuesday, considering that Mexico did not play as well as they possibly should have?
No, I actually don't see any big lineup changes. I think he's going to send practically the same 11 out there and just ask for more concentration, because the Panama goal that got Mexico in trouble late in the game, that was just a lack of concentration. If they were fully concentrated the whole 90 minutes, I think Mexico would have seen out the 1-0 score and taken the 3 points with that scoreline. But
some people actually blamed Ochoa for that goal. Do you think his dive was premature?
No, of course not. Once he noticed that his defense just stood still, you know, that at that moment he had to react and, you know, just make a mad sprint towards the Panamanian forward. And, you know, at that point, there's not much of any goalkeeper in the world could do. It all started with Hugo Ayala's fault. Couldn't control the ball. And then another central defender just stood there raising his hand, wishing for an offside call that, you know, was never going to come. So when a defense just completely stops playing like that, you know, there's not much a goalkeeper can do.
Right. Naib, let's talk a little bit about those Tigres players. Johnny just mentioned Hugo Ayala. One of those Tigres players was conspicuously on the bench after a lot of expectation. Midfielder Lucas Lobos, the Argentine-born Lucas Lobos. Do you expect him to see playing time tomorrow against Costa Rica?
You know, Eric, I think Lucas Lobos' thing is a player that perhaps, you know, might have been needed against Panama just to add a little bit spark. I mean, there was a lot of from Carlos Gullit Peña, but Carlos Gullit Peña is a player that's not a creative player that creates plays. He's more of a laborious laborer kind of player, worker that shows up on the attack. You know, he either scores or does passes for goal. And I think Lucas Lobos is a player that, you know, fundamentally has, you know, that capability of number 10, the typical enganche, how we call it. And against Costa Rica, there will be, there will be a lot of opportunities to...
That's how you can tell we recorded the show live, everybody. You get somebody burping in the background, that's just an added bonus right there.
Have you been on the San Miguel?
Maybe I have. I think Lobos in that aspect, because we didn't see that much from Aquino, from Giovanni, and then the game from Chicharito, you know, he had the PK missed and everything, so maybe he might not start with two strikers. I think he might start with one sole striker and Lobos playing behind that striker against Costa Rica.
Yeah, I think that was the talk before Friday's game, wasn't it? That one of the big decisions for Vucetic was whether to go with Peralta and Chicharito, or whether to drop one of them and play Lucas Lobos behind him. And I think Vucetic, being like a really pragmatic coach, I mean, I know he does take risk when it's required, but it wouldn't surprise me if he drops one of the two. I mean, I think the big question, if he is thinking that, of which one, considering just how good Peralta was on Friday and how Chicho was a bit, well, iffy, you know, a bit dodgy to say the least. I think Vucetic will be thinking long and hard about playing someone like Lobos in and packing the midfield and trying to control the game through the midfield.
Yeah, I would agree with that, actually. And to add to that, I think that we should really start to focus on this Costa Rica game. Again, a lot of quotes being thrown around before the Panama game. There was that really good Deli Valdez quote asking if they were going to sing the Mexican national anthem or the Argentine national anthem at the Estadio Azteca. Of course, only one Argentine-born player played some stitches in his skull, actually ended the game looking like Julio Gomez, one of the U-17 heroes in 2011. But Lucas Lobos and Chaco aside, Mexico definitely has some weapons up front. And we saw, out of desperation, Vucetic turning to a three-striker set towards the end of the game, Peralta, Chicharito, and Raul Jimenez all teaming up. And, of course, Jimenez from from the top of the key, as you would say in basketball terms, just launching that spectacular bicycle kick and scoring the 2-1 goal. But I digress. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the quotes that have been flying around Costa Rica. I mean, Costa Rica is already qualified for Brazil 2014, guys, and they are still just really, really pounding and railing against Mexico. There's real hatred here in terms of Central America trying to keep Mexico out of the World Cup as best as they possibly can. First quote I want to refer to is Joel Campbell, the Arsenal prospect, currently playing for Real Betis, I believe.
I think he's in Olympiacos there.
Oh, he played last season for Betis, now he's at Olympiacos, you're right. Some of these Mexicans would have you believe that they are the Spain of CONCACAF. Now, that goes along with what his manager, Jorge Luis Pinto, the Colombian, said today in a press conference, referring to some comments made by a journalist on Fox Sports. He said, in Mexico, there are clowns dressed as journalists. Anybody want to tackle either one of those? Guess not. I'll go first. I guess, clowns dressed as journalists. You know, there's, you know, guys like David Faitelson, who Tom and I have an opportunity to share an outlet with over at ESPN, have really kind of incensed Central Americans over the last few years with their comments, you know, basically insulting Salvadorians, Hondurans, people from Costa Rica, people from Panama. And I think it's just a case of the chickens coming home to roost, in the sense that all of these people are now, Mexico's not doing so well at the moment, and it looks more and more like they're going to go play the playoff against New Zealand. But, you know, do you guys think that there's some bad blood, some animosity? I mean, I was at the stadium, but when I came back home, I watched highlights of the game played on one of the two major networks in Mexico, and it seemed like the commentators were just way too negative talking about Mexico's performance. Is that fair to say?
I mean, I think you did see it a little bit. I had a chance to see the highlights from one of the big networks, Azteca, with Martinoli and Luis Garcia. And before the Raul Jimenez goal, there was a lot of negativity coming in, like, oh, how they're playing, and Panama tied already, and how can this happen? A lot of negative connotations going on. And I think it's just, with going back with the Costa Rica stuff, Eric, that you talked about, and how they're coming into this game. I mean, they're undefeated at home. They've won all of their games. They got this huge confidence boost. I mean, they got the 0-0 tie at Azteca. And I won't say they feel sort of invincible, but they have this sort of knack of, you know, we might actually win this match kind of feeling, because of all what has happened in this 2013. I mean, for Mexico, nothing has gone right. And for this country like Costa Rica, that, you know, it's been one of the countries that has been progressively moving forward, I think, in the last 10 years compared to the Honduras and El Salvador. I think, you know, it's a team in the region that has managed a consistency in the last decade or so. And of course, right now they feel they have sort of facts to hold upon on and say, you know, well, Mexico thinks sometimes that it's like the Spain of the CONCACAF. And deals like that. But I think what Mexico has to focus on is just prove it on the pitch. I think a lot of the talk that goes on prior to these matches in Central America have a lot to do with this sort of sensationalism kind of deal that go along with. You know, you see it in Panama, you see it in El Salvador, and now you see it in Costa Rica, I think, with the coach and with the players. At the end of the day, I think it's what happens on the pitch. And Mexico has won and has gotten positive results since 1992 in Costa Rica.
21 years. Johnny, do you think that Mexico is not the Spain of CONCACAF? You know, I personally think Mexico is not the Spain of anything in terms of soccer. I mean, Mexico's had some good times and some bad times as much as any other team in the world, maybe except for Brazil, Italy, Germany. But, you know, is it fair for Campbell to accuse Mexicans of feeling entitled?
I wouldn't say the Spain of CONCACAF, but I do see Campbell's point. You know, Mexicans do feel superior and sometimes with rightly so over the rest of the CONCACAF region. Of course, not at this moment. This moment, they need to kind of get their head out of there and start working to prove that point. So I do see where they're coming from, but the fact that they're just saying these facts over microphones and on TV cameras, that's just, you know, Panama tried that. Didn't work out too well for them. They ended up losing the match, you know, whether they deserve to lose or not. And, you know, Costa Rica's taking their shot at trying to distract Mexico with these comments. So it's, you know, it's a tactic that inferior teams, you know,
qualify to Brazil.
Yes. Yeah. But I think, Johnny, that what you said, superior teams, it's like, I think this is the point he's trying to stress. I mean, who's got any right to say Mexico's superior to Costa Rica at this point? You know what I mean? But they've got some really good players, and they're playing more as a team. And they're through to the World Cup, you know what I mean?
They're probably playing better football than that right now, but before the match, they're using tactics that, you know, go hand-in-hand with inferior teams. Trying to make this media war with Mexico is a tactic that inferior teams will choose to do.
All I'm saying is that I think in Mexico, he's right. I think he's right to stress to say, you know, in Mexico there is this thing that, oh, Mexico are superior, you know what I mean? And you know, it's not just something for the players. It's definitely, I think one of the big things is the federation. I think it works with quite a bit of arrogance, you know, through CONCACAF. And I think they clash heads big time with US soccer quite a lot over a lot of issues. And, you know, they want to try and... I mean, why has CONCACAF got 3.5 places for the World Cup? I mean, it's just, for me, it's a bit of a joke, to be honest. And I'm sure Mexico will have a lot to do with that, of pushing it through, because it's a powerful, rich organisation. So, yeah.
Yeah, and thank God for that extra half ticket.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Mexico could be facing elimination.
I know. Oh yeah, definitely. No, I just think, you know,
if you want to have the best football tournament in the world every 4 years, CONCACAF definitely doesn't deserve 3.5 spots. I would get CONCACAF 2 spots, but that extra spot and a half is kind of a safety net for the United States and for Mexico at this point.
Yeah, no, because both countries, you know, provide a lot of the finance and stuff. But yeah, I mean, look at the last two qualifying campaigns, you know, Mexico struggling 4 years ago, struggling now. I mean, this is the big competition, you know what I mean? This is your local rivals, and if you can't even defeat your local rivals, and how are you gonna kind of step up at the world stage, which is something that I think we all thought might happen over these next 2-3 years, you know what I mean, where Mexico does become you know, a team that we can see is safely in the top, you know, 15, possibly sneaking into the top 10 of the world. But if you can't even, you know, you can't get a result at home against Jamaica and you know, and the rest of the 0-0 draws, and then struggle against Panama, with full respect to Panama, I mean, you know, honestly, if you're Argentina or Brazil or a top team, then, you know, I think you come over at home against a team like Panama or Jamaica and all the teams in CONCACAF, I think you stroll through them, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but even top European teams, they struggle through qualification process with those, you know, Eastern Europe, smaller countries. And, you know, the important part for them is just to qualify. You know, once, you know, you take a look at four-time world champion Italy, even the group stage of World Cups, they're very unimpressive. So I guess Mexico could, come this time next year, or come summertime next year, if they manage to get their act together, no one's gonna remember the qualification process if Mexico were to make it to a semifinal. You know, because Mexico do have the quality to aspire to make it to a semifinal, and if they do manage that, no one's gonna remember the qualification process.
Yeah, I think I will have to agree with that with Johnny. I think, I mean, it's. You know, what I think adds a lot of resonance, I think, with the situation with Mexico is that, you know, there's that conceived notion that, you know, Mexico should cruise in CONCACAF because it already won a gold medal in London. It won some U-17 World Cups. It finished third place in a U-20 World Cup. So, I mean, there's processes that have been accomplished in the youth systems but have not been able to be incorporated into the senior team, and you're not able to see the fruits that much. I mean, you see the Diego Reyes, you know, you see Raul Jimenez, who was a surprise in the Olympic call-up, scoring the bicycle kick goal. But it's tough for a youngster to click in into the senior team in Mexico. And it's part of the growing aspect of Mexican football. And it's true, what Johnny says. I mean, Mexico has to go to New Zealand, 6,000 miles from Mexico City, to qualify to this World Cup. But if they reach a point that they make the quarterfinals or the semifinals, like Johnny says, people are not going to talk about the horrendous World Cup qualifying or hexagonal that Mexico has had.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I'd say is I think that even this seems to be kind of, for me, even talking about potentially playing New Zealand. I mean, I don't honestly, the way Mexico are playing at the minute and what they've done this year, I think that's a really difficult game. I honestly do. I mean, if they can't get the job done in the Azteca, which would be the first, the first round, then they've got to travel the other side of the world to New Zealand. I honestly think it's not going to be as easy as Mexico think, and it's going to be another team that will sit back and defend. I mean, I think before we talk about, semi-finals and quarter-finals, it's like, I honestly think Mexico could struggle against a team as New Zealand, as low as they are down the FIFA rankings at the minute.
Yeah, but I mean, if you think about what New Zealand's manager said, gave an interview last Sunday, and I thought it was very interesting that he was at the game on Friday and nobody noticed that he was at the game. Everybody was just so intensely focused on this Panama game that they didn't even notice that the guy was there. So he said that back to New Zealand, meaning even the New Zealand coach, who has seen probably at this point now all of Mexico's games, is thinking that New Zealand can go into the Estadio Azteca and lose about 5-0. There's a lot of respect for Mexican soccer. I don't know if that bodes well for them. I think the teams that tend to over-respect their rivals can endure some big losses. But yeah. Mexico's not very good with pressure, to be honest. So this issue is something that that is going to, I think, catch fire as we move on. I think if Mexico beats Costa Rica, then you've turned a very dire situation into a modest 2-game winning streak. And then you get another game at home against New Zealand. If you win that game, by whatever score, that means you've won 3 games in a row. I think you have the utmost confidence going into New Zealand, even with that long trip. I don't care if Mexico wins that game 1-0, 2-0.
Yeah, no matter.
I heard a rumor the other day that the Federation might be thinking of playing this game against New Zealand at 12 noon in Toluca. That's how worried the Mexican Federation is right now of the World Cup. And
it's ridiculous, yeah.
If you can get an advantage in Toluca at 12 noon, I say go for it. You use whatever means necessary.
Yeah. I mean, Mexico didn't play the games in the afternoon like they had done before, did they? And that was, yeah. I mean, they played the US. I think it was, it'd been raining the day. It was nice and cool, 7, 8 o'clock kickoff. So it was, you've only got the altitude at that point to deal with. Just moving on a little bit from that. I mean, picking up from what Eric was saying about, teams and respect and stuff like that. I think it's going to be fascinating to see how Costa Rica approach Tuesday's game, in terms of, I think Joel Campbell, he also said, apart from that, he said, Mexico are coming here and, they're going to come now to Costa Rica and they're going to have to suffer. We're going to go out of this game and we're going to have fun. I think it's going to be fascinating to see how Costa Rica approach it. I mean, there must be a temptation from Pinto, the manager, to say, let's have a really good go at this Mexico team. You know what I mean? Let's really go at them with the home crowd behind us from the start, and let's really try and get a couple of early goals. You know what I mean? Rather than if it was there was something at stake for Costa Rica, I don't think they would, definitely don't think they would do that, you know what I mean? I just think it's going to be that first 10 minutes just to see Costa Rica and how they set up is going to be fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, the last Hex match that happened, and I mean, it was back at the old Saprissa Stadium, the one that, you know, how Jorge Vergara put money in, but now they're going to play in this Chinese, you know, stadium, Estadio Nacional. There's changes. It's actually natural grass now, not turf, like the Saprissa Stadium. But that game, that last Hex game, Mexico won 3-0, and the player of the game was Giovanni Dos Santos. He scored that goal, then an assist to Guillermo Franco, I think, another assist to Andres Guardado. So, I mean, it's going to be a game, I think, I wouldn't say that's going to be, like, pretty much the same game again, but the first minutes, you know, usually Costa Rica studies Mexico, and Mexico does the same with Costa Rica. And this type of match, I think, is where Buse shines. You know, this is the type of match that, you know, he will be able to sort of control more of what he's known for and playing all these finals and winning all these finals. I mean, because basically what Vucetic is doing, he's playing finals. And that's why they call him the Rey Midas, no?
Yeah. Careful. And just there, Naib, you mentioned Giovanni Dos Santos getting the goals last time they were down there. I mean, I don't know, one thing that stuck out for me obviously Giovanni was just lost, you know what I mean? Playing mainly on the right wing. I mean, I'm sure Vucetic going into this game on Tuesday is going to be having a good think about how to use Giovanni and where, you know what I mean? I don't know if you've got any thoughts on how he should be used or whether he could be used in a different role or whether he should be dropped altogether. I mean,
you know, I think there has to be some type of accord going on there with Vucetic and Giovanni. What does Giovanni want and what does Vucetic want out of Giovanni? I think what struck me was he was disinterested at one point in the match of not putting effort in going in and playing the dribble, at least confronting the defender. Because when you see Chaco coming in, you see some spark going on, and you didn't see that spark coming from Giovanni, and that's where the criticism comes upon Giovanni. It is true that he wasn't playing his position. I mean, he was playing on the right flank, where he sort of gets lost all the time. He doesn't feel important in some point or another. And the best way to put him in a position where he feels comfortable is that as a second forward, playing alongside either Peralta or Chicharito. But in that game at Azteca, you know, Vucetic ended with three strikers. So, we're talking that maybe Vucetic is seeing the game differently. And Giovanni doesn't even fit on the starting lineup. And if that is the case, I mean, if you can have another player playing that position that Giovanni played at San Jose, then let it be. I mean, if Brizuela is going to give you better minutes than, for example, Giovanni, well, Brizuela would get the start. For example, I mean, I'm just giving an example. I don't know if Brizuela will start, but he's a player that can give you benefits on that right flank. And because Aquino is not a true, he doesn't play in the left flank for Villarreal. He plays on the right flank, but, you know, those changes occurred because, you know, people say that Giovanni cutting in with his left foot, he can shoot, and that's why he starts from the right. But, I mean, I didn't see that, you know, sort of colorful type of football that Giovanni gets characterized with.
Yeah. No, it was difficult, wasn't it? He had a difficult night, I think, more than anything. I think when he plays on the right, especially when there's two central strikers, he's obviously got more responsibility, like defensively and stuff. And I don't think positionally he knows really how to deal with it in that formation. You know, I think if he's just given a free roll down the right, and he's fine. And if he's in the middle, as a number 10, is also obviously I think that's his best position. But what about Raúl Jiménez? There's been talk about. Yeah, obviously with that amazing goal that he's now really pressuring Chicharito and Peralta for a starting spot. Would anybody start him on Tuesday?
I would. I'd partner up Peralta and Jiménez. They're versatile forwards. They can do more than just finish like Chicharito. And I think Chicharito would be a great sub to have in the second half. You know, with his speed, maybe tired legs on the field in the second half. Chicharito would be, you know, a great sub to put in, but I'd definitely go with Peralta and Jiménez together.
Eric, what do you reckon? Jiménez, Peralta, Chicharito, two of the three, all three?
I don't think he'll get the start. I think they'll keep him on the bench precisely as kind of a super sub. Peralta scored, and he scored off of a pass, off of a good play with Chicharito. And Chicharito scores that penalty kick against Panama, we wouldn't even be having this discussion, even if Jimenez had scored that amazing goal. You know, strikers, they're a streaky breed, but I think that at this point, since you're not even going for a win necessarily, I mean, you need a draw to get into the playoff. I wouldn't change too much. I wouldn't put all three of them, that's for sure. And I wouldn't bench Chicharito because, as we all know, I mean, sometimes this is the only type of situation where you could get to see him in regular minutes. And you send him back to England with just 90 minutes to do. So I think we'll get the start, but he'll probably get a short hook. Chicharito will probably get a short hook if he doesn't get good chances in front of goal. And that's where you'll see Jimenez, depending on the situation in the match.
So are we seeing the same lineup for tomorrow, Tuesday?
I would definitely see or expect to see the same 11 go out there. Maybe Chaco instead of Peña. That's the only change I'd make.
I'd probably put in Lobos instead of Aquino. And then, like I mentioned a couple minutes ago, Jimenez over Chicharito, but that one's not very likely. The Lobos instead of Aquino, especially on the left flank, where Aquino's just not any good.
I think he's going to strongly consider Lobos for one of the strikers, and I think at this point, I think it's Chicharito. So I thought Peralta was absolutely outstanding on Friday. Like, I really thought maybe the best game I've seen him for Mexico. I thought he was unbelievable. I mean, I don't know. I think that's the only one. I think the other one that I'll be considering is Ayala. He might be looking at his place and looking to put Mier in there. I think those are the two that he'll definitely be thinking long hard about. And also Aquino. I think Aquino for Chaco. I think Chaco might start as well.
One thing that has gone on unmentioned so far is the fact that while Layún didn't have, you know, the greatest game of his career, you know, he has offered a lot more attacking options as the right back than Chepo de la Torre's 3 years in charge. That, you know, he's been the most attacking right back that we've had.
Yeah, there's that pass to Chaco Jimenez in the second half that if Chaco, you know, would have been more sharp, I think that would have gone in, and that pass came from Miguel Layún.
No, definitely. The only thing I think about Layún is that, you know, I don't think he's a naturally great defender. And I think we can make a firm decision about, you know, whether he is that right back for the national team when he's come under a bit more pressure playing as a right back and not as a right wing back at America. You know what I mean? Although that's not taking anything away from him, his performance on Friday. I thought, like, same as you, Johnny, I thought it was absolutely amazing and bombing down the wing. You know what I mean? I thought, he looked like one of the most dangerous weapons Mexico had, to be honest.
So, prediction time?
Why not? go on, someone start off.
I say a 2-0 from Mexico. And I think, you know, if Giovanni starts tomorrow, I see Giovanni scoring again in Costa Rica. He likes La Vida in Costa Rica, I guess. And
pura vida.
He likes the pura vida, Giovanni. So it fits well with his character. So I think Giovanni will score, and I'll give a goal to Peralta again. I think, you know, it's Oribe believer time right now more than ever.
Yeah,
I think it's gonna all come down. There's gonna be ice, you know, and other games going on at the same time. And if Mexico gets wind that, you know, Jamaica is pulling off an upset over Honduras, then I can see a 2-0 win for Mexico to try and get that direct ticket. But if they get hold that, you know, Honduras got the direct ticket, then I think they're just going to play for a tie, maybe get a one-goal win or a draw.
Going for a 1-1. I think it's going to be an absolute dogfight. I think it's going to be really intense. A lot of tackles flying in. And I think it's just going to be a real nail biter because honestly,
does it end 11 against 11?
Eh?
That's an N 11 against 11?
I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me at all if both teams had a player sent off. But I think it's going to be a lot tighter than people think. I mean, I think people are assuming that Mexico are going to get the result and that the other, you know, Panama are going to struggle against the US. But, I mean, look at Panama at home. They've not lost. US have struggled away, even though they're through comfortably. So I think on paper you'd have to put Panama edge in that game. And I think that if they take an early lead, then all the pressure's on Mexico. And I honestly think it's going to be a real nail biter and one of those classic kind of end of qualification nights where things are changing up and stuff.
That phone signifies that we need to stop the show, I guess.
All we need is your prediction, Eric.
Yeah. I'm going to go with 0-0. It's going to be tense all the way. No goals. 0-0.
Nice. And Ochoa shutout. All right.
Yeah, 0-0. I mean, it's probably going to be really tense and difficult for both teams to score because Costa Rica... Again, you know, despite the fact that I think it's mostly talk that they want to leave, you know, Mexico out of the World Cup and blah, blah, blah. I think that they know that it's not even on them. You know, even if Costa Rica were to win at home against Mexico, Panama's not going to beat the U.S. The U.S. has probably been the best team out of this entire hex. They played. And, you know, it's going to be a 0-0 because Mexico is, I think, going to be very desperate to go out there and get a goal. But Costa Rica doesn't waver from their strategy home or away. You know, they're just going to park the bus. So 0-0, Mexico gets in and they play New Zealand in November. Here's hoping we can book a flight.
Oh, sweet.
they'll play in San Diego before then against Finland, October 30th.
I think they'll probably move or cancel that, to be honest with you. That game was signed on at the start of the year. They built this calendar out for Mexico, and that was all kind of assuming that Mexico was going to be qualified by them, and it would kind of be a victory lap. Or they might play the game with just, you know, 11 Liga MX guys vying for a spot. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't see how it would hurt. I mean, it's a new coach, and you know, the more minutes the new coach gets to get the players to learn his system, like, can only benefit them.
Yeah, and then there's this whole debate going on. We'll see what happens tomorrow. But if it looks that, you know, the European-based players don't show their best potential, I mean, it's likely that Vucetich will go with all Liga MX players in the two matches against New Zealand as they play the playoff.
Yeah, I would hope that he takes as many players as he possibly can to New Zealand, even if they lose one or two Liga MX games, you know? But who knows? Maybe that's not the case. Maybe we see Mexico just doing the same thing that they did, just having these players train a couple times a week away from their clubs and then take them all the way over to New Zealand, but it'll definitely be interesting. So there you have it, our predictions, our review of the Panama game, and all of the analysis leading up to Costa Rica on Tuesday. We'll be with you very soon, and thanks for listening. As always, you can definitely follow us on Twitter, at Mex Soccer Show is our handle. Definitely give us a like on Facebook as well, and just, you know, hope and pray along with us that Mexico is able to get past this little hurdle and move towards New Zealand. So thank you very much again for listening. We'll see you next time. Mexico!